C3, Connecting Coaches Cognition, coaching with Courtney and Christensen. As a busy coach, you spend all day refueling, revamping, and reflecting with educators. Now is the time to stop and recharge your batteries with some much-needed coaching for the coach.
Welcome back to another episode of C3. I'm Courtney Groskin, and I'm here with
Violet Christensen.
Violet, what's new in your world?
Oh, new in my world. I feel like my brain is just floating towards summeritis and summertime. And so in the personal side of things, I think I'm just thinking of the things that are new to come, as in, like, I've been spending lots of time on Airbnb and other things researching, like, where could we go to have fun this summer? Or where could be a beachy place to hang out with my family, or just planting some of my plants and getting gardens going. It always really invigorates me and makes me get energized at this time. And I know it's something that brings me that power of the pause and that power of deeper cognition when I take some time to step away from some of the work things and do those things that truly bring me joy. And I mean, the beach and gardening, those are pretty much two of my favorite things.
Yeah, I agree. Spring awakenings, right? New things on the horizon. Always keeping that summer planning at the forefront kind of makes it easier to get through these middle months here.
It really does. Just even calendaring a few things that are just for our family or just special events for my girls. It really brings that light and helps you stay like trudging down the course, but also trying to remain mindful of finishing out the year strong and making sure to support my colleagues in the best ways possible and have those deeper coaching conversations looking towards next year, you know, like finding the balance, right?
Definitely. We're always finding the balance on C3.
Pause and balance are probably our most used themes, right?
Totally.
Well, tell me what's going on with you, Miss Courtney.
I mean, it's living in that weird in between where you're putting things on your calendar for next year, but you don't really know what next year looks like. And you're planning things that are happening in next year. And you're questioning, like, am I living more in the future than I am in the present? And then something will happen to pull you right back into the today. So it's that weird in between for those of you in education who often work on planning teams and things. You start living in that August, September realm, and it's only, you know, March here.
Better to be ahead of it than behind it, right?
Yeah, you're going full speed on that treadmill and it's just keeping up pace.
But the light is getting closer. So it's always nice. I love that in education where we have those incremental breaks so that we're able to recharge and revamp and re-energize.
Yeah. And as the weather warms up here and the daylight lasts a little longer, it makes it a little easier to steal some time after work to relax and recharge a little.
Absolutely. I'm sure Pickles is looking forward to more of that.
Totally.
Tricia Skiles is a senior educational consultant and featured presenter with Randy Sprick's Safe in Civil Schools. After being a classroom teacher, Tricia served as an instructional coach with Dr. Jim Knight. Through her initial work with coaching, she assisted teachers in implementing CHAMPS classroom management. After moving into the role of behavior coach, she began to work extensively with the Safe and Civil Schools Library of Resources. She now works with SCS to provide training, coaching, and consulting with district and campus leaders, coaches, and classroom teachers.
Welcome, Tricia.
Tricia, we are ecstatic to have you here today and to be able to jump into this dynamic conversation. And we always want to ground our listeners in a little bit of information about you and who you are, and tell us just a bit about your background in education and also specifically in coaching.
Well, first of all, ecstatic. That really sets the bar very high for how this recording is going to go. So let's manage our expectations for your listeners that are out there. We're going to do the best we can. My background really is a lot of preparedness meeting some lucky opportunities, obviously. I started out as a middle school teacher in a very rural district in Kansas, a consolidated district, teaching seventh grade, which I never thought I'd teach. And we were restructuring how our school was going to look and sound. And so I got a new opportunity within that system. And I went to learned some new curriculum from Dr. Jim Knight, who many of you, I'm sure, obviously know. And Jim, during that week, said, hey, I think you should apply for a job as an instructional collaborator, because long ago, that's what we were called, was collaborators. I didn't know anything about it, but I thought I could probably dust off some of my interview skills. So I took the chance and applied, and was granted in an interview and had no plans to actually take the job if it were even offered to me. And my husband and I drove back to where we lived about an hour and a half away from Topeka, and the landline rang, which I know some of your younger listeners may not realize what that is, but that was back before we all had mobile phones. And so our landline rang and it was Jim Knight. He said, "The job is yours if you want it." And I said, "I'll take it." And then I hung up the phone and my husband said, "What did you do?" And I was like, total leap of faith. And I spent about the first, 2 weeks grieving over my decision, which I'm sure you all and many coaches, when you leave that classroom, there's a grieving period that you have to go through. And then once I found my stride, I really started to enjoy working with adults. I learned mostly through error, a lot of trial and a lot of error, but that's how I got into coaching. And then we really just found that a lot of behavior management systems were getting in the way of us providing the instructional coaching. And so they brought in Randy Sprick and Safe and Civil Schools, and I started working with them more extensively. Behaviors really where my love is at, probably mainly because I was your tier 3 student in school. And I stayed there. And then Randy poached me a couple of years after we started the project. So now here I am, just wandering around the universe, talking to people about system design.
I love that all roads lead to Jim Knight. I think we need to start the 6 degrees of Jim Knight and
seriously
taken out, because everyone is connected somehow to Jim Knight.
And I always have to, when people go, "Oh, well, do you know Jim Knight?" And then I always feel like, boom, like I can just drop it, like with street cred, like it immediately gives me street credibility that I worked with him and for him, and he's a mentor of mine, and he's been a friend now for 23 and a half years.
Well, he has quite the PLN, and definitely his name has popped up more than anyone else throughout our many years of podcasting. And it's fun to just, I think a diagram wall, like the yarn and the strings and the pins, and figure out how everyone's connected would be like really interesting to dive in.
Oh, 100%. I sat in a meeting once with Jim Knight and Randy Sprick and then Don Deschler, which those of you with a special ed background would recognize that name as one of the leading researchers in special education. And I remember I was looking around the room thinking, I think there's been a mistake. Like, are they going to notice I'm here and kick me out? Like one of these things is not like the others. You need to get out. But I will say about all three of them is amazingly, truly gracious people with no sense of ego when you're all in a meeting and bringing ideas to the table. It was an incredible experience.
So many great minds. You've had such a great work experience that you're able to bring to our listeners. Everyone that hears CHAMPS, I'm sure, is intrigued. Could you provide an overview of what CHAMPS stands for and how it serves as a framework within a classroom?
I can. May I start by saying that CHAMPS is somewhat an error of a title on the book, which you guys have probably figured out since the last couple of revisions. For new listeners who may not know what the CHAMPS acronym actually stands for, I'm going to define it first. And it's simply the 5 areas in which kids get into trouble during different learning activities within the classroom. So when you think about providing direct instruction, or providing cooperative group activities, or providing centers or labs, et cetera, where kids get into trouble is conversation, talking to the wrong people at the wrong time about the wrong things, help, not knowing to get their questions answered, or even sometimes what questions to ask, not understanding the actual activity that they're supposed to be engaged in. You have some kids that are working on math when they should be working on science, et cetera. And then movement is the M. So kids either moving around the room in disruptive patterns, sometimes not moving quickly enough. And then participation, just in general, what does good, authentic participation look like? Because sometimes, especially as kids get older, we tend to believe that if they're just not disruptive, they're fully participating. And we know that that's where we lose a lot of our instructional minutes. And ideally, if you're a teacher thinking through how would I best engage my students in X instructional activity, I'm going to clarify those five categories so that then they can successfully engage. And that's that S in CHAMPS. And that is one portion of a really comprehensive behavior management plan, are your expectations for instructional activities. So the real emphasis within the newer editions of CHAMPS is on that other acronym, which is the Stoic framework. And so if I could retitle the book Stoic, I would. CHAMPS is such an iconic title that, of course, that's what everyone knows. That's probably the biggest conundrum people find themselves in, is just thinking, well, if I create a poster with the acronym and all my activities, I will have solved classroom management. But the Stoic framework is a reminder of all the variables that we have some level of power and control over: how we structure our classroom, how we overtly teach kids what behavior looks like and how to navigate our classroom, how we set up a system of observation so that we can provide feedback to kids, and then how we interact positively with kids when they hit the target and get it right, and how we correct fluently in a way that doesn't degrade that relationship that we've built. So that Stoic framework is really the umbrella under which that CHAMPS acronym then falls. But you know, in education, we love acronyms. Any of you listening out there, if you're going to write a book about education, you better come up with an acronym, because you got to have one.
There are oh so many floating around, and then it's always so many layers to all the acronyms and how they all come together to formulate that beautiful, beautiful classroom system and that beautiful educational system when we're trying to seek that. But I love that you need an acronym. You might need a glossary too for all the acronyms, right?
Right. Well, it's like, okay, guys, we're going to do CHAMPS within Stoic and your PBIS classroom model that's part of MTSS. And don't forget your RTI. And we got to get this to work ASAP. And it's no wonder that, you know, all of us, all of our educators are overwhelmed from time to time. We're throwing so much at them and we think we're packaging it really neatly. But the problem is, if all of these packages are landing at their feet with no good way to navigate through them, it becomes really, really difficult to implement effectively, which is really where coaching comes in. It's helping to unpack all those packages and figure out what is going to best serve the needs of our teachers and, you know, overall, obviously, our kids and student achievement.
Thank you for just pulling back those layers for us and being able to share that with our listeners. I always think it's so nice to be able to have that insight. And we just want to have a little bit more from you about how the book addresses the specific challenges of behavior management systems, and also how it emphasizes the role of coaching in improving that instructional quality. If you can give us a little bit more of a vignette, we would love that.
Oh, well, again, coaching CHAMPS, we went around and around about what to title this book, because it's such a departure from the older version of coaching classroom management, which you two are probably familiar with and other listeners might be familiar with. So we decided to retitle it, and it was really difficult to come up with a very simple coaching title. So we just aligned it with the Safe and Civil Schools Library. The subtitle of the book is creating a framework of support, or a system of support for all staff. It's really creating a tier one system in which the implementation of effective classroom management resources, predominantly led, of course, by CHAMPS, as it aligns with our library, so that teachers can actually put it into, teachers can actually apply it in a way that will have unmistakable impact. And the only way to do that, to provide truly MTSS for students, is if we as leaders, and that would include your coaching group of both evaluators and non-evaluators, if we as leaders can create that system of MTSS for staff. I always hesitate there. I'm like, did I just say system of multi-tiered system of support? See, again, it's those acronyms. We're just throwing systems at it. So truly, when people ask me what I do for a living, which is truly usually on an airplane, I'll say, oh, I'm a systems analyst. That is usually boring enough. There are no follow-up questions, which is exactly what I'm after. If there's a follow-up question, I'll say, well, I analyze systems within districts and campuses and classrooms. So this first section of the Coaching Champs book is made so that leadership teams of your evaluators and non-evaluators can go in and proactively build that system of support for staff. And so it can be applied to any initiative. It just so happens in the Coaching Champs book, we also make it specific to classroom management, because that's kind of a chicken or an egg thing, right? It's an underpinning to getting good instruction going. However, if you have really good instruction, sometimes that eliminates a lot of the behavioral issues that are at play in your classroom as well. So it really specifically looks at how to leverage coaches within tier one in a more informal manner, where you are going in and engaging in coaching cycles based on more formal requests by the teacher, but you're also helping admin to collect trend data so that you can sit down on a regular basis and figure out where are we having system challenges where an individual intervention would not be effective. Because we know you cannot address a system challenge effectively through individual intervention. We know this with students, or we should by now. If you have a system that has a lot of gaps within it, even the best individual behavior plan is not going to be as effective. Well, for years, coaching cycles have been looked at as an individual intervention, and we forgot you have to look at the system in which that coaching is occurring. Because if the system is a hot mess, there was nothing put into place to support teachers in the first place, even the best coaching cycle will not have sustainability over time.
Yeah, I really appreciate how Safe and Civil Schools outlines everything. It's thought of a way, how do we collect the data? How do we really know what's going on? And then what steps to take next? And it provides that framework for the coaches. And then that trickles down to the framework to work with the teachers.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think for so long, coaching, even with all the resources that are out there, we are very resource rich as coaches, just like our teachers are very resource rich. Sometimes there's not a tool that tells us specifically how to navigate the system in which we apply all those resources. So I've been very proud to be a part of that creation process.
So with all your experience, what are some common challenges that instructional coaches face, and how does the Coaching Champs approach address or mitigate these challenges to enhance the coaching process?
Well, I'm going to answer your question with a question. I don't know how often this happens, but it's going to, now we're going to, oh, how the turntables turn. We're going to go to you, because I'm going to ask, if you were to say someone's going into coaching and they said, what's one of the biggest challenges I'm going to face? And you could only give them one, what would you give them?
I guess I would say, and hold on to the sentiment you were on a moment ago, of that interdependence between balancing your administration and honoring what the system goals are and trying to continuously press forward while also honoring the teacher that is right in front of you and their requests, because sometimes they're aligned and sometimes they're not. And so being able to have that finesse and nuance in order to help each other see, all be on the same page and see each other's perspective and the importance in both of those goals, and finding ways to interweave between them, if that makes sense. But I think being able to hold the individual and the system and the administration all in high regard and also in high impact coaching conversations can be a delicate thing to be able to balance.
I think that was a great way to define it, because you're really in almost a no man's land. You're not quite an administrator. You're not quite a teacher. You have to validate everyone while still pushing for change with all entities. And you have to figure out ways to rock the boat, but stay in it, which can be very, very difficult. So we'll expand on that a little bit. And then what would you say, Courtney?
I think I'd add on to that of how do your beliefs fit into this? Because we have the system's beliefs, the principal's beliefs, and then that teacher's classroom you're going into, and then your own personal beliefs as a coach. So do you have those clearly defined, and where do those fit within the system?
Absolutely. And we do training. We even talk about the, you know, set of beliefs that we usually put forward within our own campuses that we expect students to just automatically pursue and master, you know, things like responsibility, safety, respect, and how you can have competing principles that will inadvertently violate others. And that happens to all of us. And so how do you even find out what are your true beliefs? Because it's easy to espouse what we think our beliefs should be, right? It's easy to say we have to validate everyone while still providing the catalyst by which we create urgency to promote change. But the actual doing of it is driven sometimes by internal beliefs of which we aren't even aware. So I would agree that those are some really big challenges. And there's no cut and dried. If you do this, it ultimately mitigates for walking that line, right? If you do this, it ultimately mitigates for competing principles. I would say one of the hardest things is just to master some of the communication skills necessary to do both of those things. And part of that is suspending the belief that as a coach, you have the right answer. And that is a very difficult thing because many of our coaches were tapped because of their ability to very quickly identify and solve problems. And that leadership capacity, that actually has to go on the back burner. You have to suspend the belief you have all the answers. And you are truly looking for how do we build common ground amongst all of the entities so that we can push forward together. Because I do agree, you know, and I'm sure a lot of very more famous people than I have said this, right? That we have much more in common than we have different, but no one is listening to find out where those commonalities are. And so as a coach, to really set aside some of our natural tendencies to provide advice in the moment and find those spots where we can all come together, that's a difficult task. It's a very difficult task to shut off that advice monster, as you know, Michael Stainier calls it. And I don't know if you guys have looked at The Coaching Habit and The Advice Trap, probably two of my favorite books. Have you had him on the podcast yet?
We have.
Have you? And I missed that episode.
Him and Jim Knight, you got to go back. You got to listen.
The early season.
I listened to the Jim Knight one, but I have to tell you, Michael Stainier, you can choose to include this in your podcast or not. Michael Stainier, who I adore, I have a huge professional crush on him. But the first time I met him was at Jim Knight's conference. And I guess I had never looked up to see what he looked like for whatever reason, but I read The Coaching Habit and I cited his work very often. And we were sitting at the head table at the TLC conference, I think probably in Indianapolis. I can't remember what year he keynoted. And we were asked to find a partner and he was sitting beside me. Had no idea who he was because as an introvert, I was not doing a great job of, you know, let's talk it out, everyone. And so he happened to be the person who was going to be my partner. And here's the first thing I said to him. I hope you're not a dud. That's what I said. Oh. And then like 5 minutes later, Jim's like, and now here's our keynote speaker, Michael Stainier. And I'm telling you, I died. A piece of me died that day. Never just expired. Never came back to life. Came back to life. And I have cited his work so often. And then in the Coaching Champs book, didn't cite him at all. I am the worst fan possible. I love your work. It's so integrated. I will forget all about it being a whole separate thing.
Well, now we can tag him in this episode.
And oh, God.
That's a little payback. He's getting some airtime.
So rough. Yes.
We do the best we can. That's all you can do.
That's right. That is the motto for coaches, really. We do the best we can. That should be the motto for all of us. We do the best we can. I heard something on an Instagram reel the other day because that's how we all learn now. And seriously, a lot of my new kind of coaching habits or tactics I've picked up through the world of Instagram, but something really stuck with me. And it was a guy who said, of course, it's difficult to receive constructive feedback of any kind. And yet another challenge that is a subset of the communication challenges that we face as coaches, right? Having those difficult conversations where you're bringing some level of construction or helping people to reflect on constructive feedback. And the guy said, we have to stop thinking of ourselves as perfect entities. He said, if you think of yourself as a good-ish person. Like, I am good-ish at my job. I'm a good-ish human being. Like, if you just start living in the mindset of, I'm good-ish. When somebody provides you with constructive feedback, you're more willing to take it because you're like, yeah, that sounds about, you know, on brand because I'm just good-ish anyway. So I've been trying to do that and recognizing how, if it's difficult, how much of our ego gets in the way of that. And of course, the more ego you have, the more difficult I think it is to navigate that no man's land in the coaching world.
Yeah. And that goes right back to the coaches not having all the answers. Mm-hmm. That mindset.
Yeah. Right there. But that should really take a burden off coaches' shoulders too, that you don't have to have all the right answers anyway. I mean, our goal is not to hide our expertise, but our goal is certainly to bring out the expertise in others. It's to shine a spotlight on their abilities more so than ours.
Yeah, we love to phrase it as stop solving and start asking.
Yeah, absolutely. We talk a lot about inquiry. Again, something that's really difficult, the bigger your ego is, you're not curious if you already think you know everything there is to know about a certain topic or situation.
And just being mindful of all of those listening set-asides that you're trying to utilize at the same time within a coaching conversation and just being mindful as you walk into that conversation each day.
Right. Yeah. Oh gosh. Absolutely. I mean, I'm sure you've had many of your podcast sessions have revolved around some layer of communication skills.
Probably every episode has some nuance there. I think
every time.
Coaching is such a multi-layered approach and there's just so many nuances to being a good coach that it comes up constantly on the podcast.
So when we, you know, going back to the Coaching Champs book and how it mitigates for that, when we created the first section, because it's actually tiered out. So how do you leverage coaches in tier one? How do you leverage coaches for teachers who qualify for additional support, which, you know, as a reminder, additional support is not just for teachers who may be operating in deficit, right? Additional support is also for our exemplars that are out there. And then how do you use or leverage coaching if you put a teacher on a formal plan of improvement? So that first section, we designed it around the Stoic framework. There's a chapter on change in general, but then there's a chapter on, okay, how are we going to structure our system to support the implementation of X resource, in this case, very specific to a classroom management model, highlighting CHAMPS, and of course, discipline in the secondary classroom for those of you know, your listeners who may know that as a resource. And then it goes into teach. How are we going to overtly teach our staff exactly what they need to know in order to implement well? How are we going to set up a system of observation, et cetera? Well, the I is where we focus on communication skills. So it goes in order of the framework. But if it were to go in order of importance, it would be that, you know, fifth chapter on communication strategies that would be first. And so if I can just get people to really start to practice on using those communication strategies as they set up the structure, as they communicate to teachers exactly what they need to do, as they set up a system of data collection to look at trends and whether or not something is a system challenge or necessitates an individual intervention, how much simpler that can be. So ideally, if you want to push things forward, you have to master those communication skills. And if you don't, even a how-to book that's set up like Coaching Champs is going to run into some pitfalls from time to time because you're going to run in and go, have I got the solution here? And you're going to cram that idea of tier one support for teachers down everyone's throats. And even if it's a really well thought out idea, people will immediately be resistant to it.
Well, it's an efficacy piece.
Yes. Absolutely. It's like parenting advice, right? Like, I mean, I don't know, Violet, have you ever received unsolicited parenting advice?
Yes, I have actually.
And in the moment you get that advice, even if it's great advice, but in the moment you get it, are you thinking, wow, I am so lucky that someone actually took data and noticed that there's a gap in what I am providing for my child and took the time to come up with a strategy that would serve me better and then sat me down and walked me through it. No, that's probably not going, that's not what's going through your, what's going through your mind.
That's definitely not normally what's going through your mind. You're being a little bit more like, wait, why, what, what's wrong in my world? But I also have to say, and I think this applies to the coaching world, is it has to do with the rapport and relationship of who it's coming from. And so if you have that deep level of support and structure and a safe space with that person, it's very different coming from your best friend who's also a mom versus the person at, you know, King Supers who just saw you in the line in a dark, in a hard moment with your spicy child. You know, it comes from different worlds, right?
Spice, your spicy child. That would be a good title of the book that you're going to write. And then SPICE, that's your acronym.
We've got it.
Well, and then that circles back around to coaching behavior versus coaching academics. Behavior is a much more personal conversation than the academic conversation. If you come to me and say, hey, we're looking at benchmark scoring from last year, our state assessment tests are showing that our kids are not reading at grade level. Let's sit down and have a conversation about what we can provide for kids to access reading strategies at a higher level and a faster rate so that we can close this gap. I'm not nearly as threatened as if you come in and say, well, academic engagement is really low because you're losing a lot of instructional minutes because your routines and procedures aren't tight enough to make sure that kids can navigate your classroom quickly and get to those learning activities. That feels a lot more personal to me. And so you have to really walk that line where you are creating a sense of urgency, but you're also creating a sense of nurturing, because you can't create urgency with overwhelm, and you can't create urgency and anger at the same time, because I will utilize that anger to just not make any changes because I felt so threatened in that moment.
And that's what the CHAMPS and Stoic framework does such a nice job of, is grounding that in the third point of having the data.
Yeah.
How do you help the person see the opportunities that might be missed in their classroom, and then coaching them through how to shift that practice and change the data the next time you go back in?
Yeah. And there's a really great screener in the Coaching CHAMPS book, the Stoic screener. And there's for the Stoic checklist for classroom management, or the Stoic screener for classroom management now is how it's been put into the coaching book. And it really doesn't assume that a teacher has to have a specific resource that they are applying. So it allows for that level of autonomy. If I have a teacher that says, hey, I've been teaching for 33 years and I have cobbled together through the years my own system design of classroom management that includes a lot of different resources, including some I've probably forgotten and some I've created myself, I would say, great, let's go through the screener and still make sure that you've considered all these things, because sometimes your tacit knowledge is so wide, you will forget some of the intentionality behind some of those first things that you did. And so you've got to allow for that autonomy, but it's the data that then provides the consistency. So if I am an administrator and at the beginning of the year, I say, listen, this is our target. When I walk into your classroom, I need to see a minimum of 80% of your kids actively engaged in whatever the learning activity is, and 80% of your kids at a minimum in alignment with your expectations. The goal is 90, but we're looking for an absolute bare minimum of 80%. But how you get there is up to you. So Violet, if I walk into your classroom, let's say you've just stopped teacher guided instruction, you're going to start independent seat work. And I've walked in, I'm going to do some data pulls on engagement and alignment. And let me tell you, Violet, you've got kids, they are up walking around, they are talking to each other because you've allowed them to ask questions to their peers. They can get materials from any place in the room. They can actually come up to you directly. They don't have to raise their hand to get your attention. You're talking to kids as they access you. I might walk in and as an administrator think, oh, I would never set up independent work like this. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. This is what I tell admin all the time. It doesn't matter how you feel about it. You have to take the data. And if I measure, and let's say 90%, even better than 80, of your kids are engaged, and 90% of your kids are in alignment with your expectation, and kids are achieving, then rock on, Violet, because you've figured out, how do I actively engage this group of kids? What do they need to do in order to make sure that they can access that information? And then if I go next door, Courtney, I walk into your classroom, let's say you teach the same grade level, same content area, you are also doing independent work. But man, your kids are seated in rows. There is absolutely no movement. There is no talking. You could hear a pin drop. Kids don't even raise their hands because you've created little tape flags on their desk that they flip up and says, help wanted. I may not like that either. And here's what I would tell admin. It doesn't matter what you like, because this is not about your cardiac assessment. And if 80 to 90% of your kids are actively engaged and 80 to 90% of your kids are in alignment with your expectation and kids are achieving, then rock on. So consistency, that's where we get the data point, and that's what allows for autonomy. But without those data points, it's just a crapshoot as far as what people will implement and how we're going to measure impact. And it goes back to that idea of what we feel is working, and perception data is only going to get you so far.
Well, you shared a ton of insight, and I'm sure our listeners are definitely intrigued to read if they haven't already. But can you share for us a story of success for a coach who worked with educators on CHAMPS or Stoic?
I would love to, because I actually just have, I have two. I have two. So you could pick and choose if you want. The first one is actually highlighted in the book. Chapter 12 is about working with a teacher who goes into a formal plan of improvement. And we're very candid in the book about where that came from. And it was actually a district leader who called and asked me, she said, when do you know it's time to let a teacher go? I think she phrased it a little differently. I think she said, when can we fire a teacher? And the first thing I said was, well, please check with your human resources department, as I am in no way an expert, you know, in that, et cetera. And I said, let me ask you a few questions. I said, what were the expectations that weren't being met? And she came back with some things like, well, she's not building relationships with kids. I said, I understand all of that. I want to know what was the actual measurable benchmark that was given to this teacher that she didn't hit. And that's when it was kind of dead silence on the other end, right? And I said, okay, so without a target, I think it would be difficult for you all to make that decision on whether or not to let a teacher go. And so they actually created a very intentional plan of support that then we worked on. And of course, for the coaching book, we have now created an intentional plan of assistance that is built around the Stoic framework. And by the time they had gone into this with the teacher, and to let you know, not only was the teacher in danger of being fired, this teacher was down to like 11 students in her classroom because so many kids had been transferred out. Even her interpersonal relationships, her marriage was falling apart. And they started this really intentional plan of assistance, utilizing a coach who had done everything that a coach needs to do to build a really solid relationship with this person. And within a few months, like I was there to do a training on the Tough Kid series, another great series out there by Bill Jensen. And she had opted, volunteered to attend with her coach so she could get coaching in real time about how she would apply this back in the classroom. Like it saved so much of what was going on in her life. And I'm not here to say coaching is the great savior of everything that is happening wrong in your life, but it was such a testament to the fact that with a clear target and resources that are aligned with that target, most people can hit it. If it's vague and ambiguous and there's no support tied to it, then most people are going to miss it. That would include all of us, because none of us are experts in all things. And so that's a huge one that we highlighted. A more recent one was I was doing a site visit in, and I'm going to drop their name. They're going to love this so much. Apple Valley, California. We talk about them all the time. Apple Valley, California. And there was a teacher. I went into their room and the teacher came up to me and she said, oh my gosh, you're with Safe and Civil Schools, because I had my name tag on. And she said, it saved my life. And of course, the first thing coaches should always do is we deflect, right? It's not us. It's always them. I'm like, I'm just giving y'all the tools. It's you that ultimately took it and ran with it and put it into place. And she said, I was ready to quit. And her coaches said the same thing. Like she was crying every day. This is not what I was designed to do. I'm a first year teacher. I'm overwhelmed. I'm drowning. And the coach worked with her on just implementing a few high leverage strategies, right? Very little work with a real high capacity to make changes. And she was a whole different person. Like, this was her second year, and the kids were so highly engaged. When I walked around and talked to the kids, they knew exactly what their expectations were. It was very much a community that she had created. And that is all to the power of a solid research-based resource. And then you have it tagged with someone who can help your practitioners navigate that through a coaching dialogue. I mean, we're unstoppable when those things are provided. But the old, you know, sit and get and hope for the best, what a waste of professional development dollars if it's not tied to coaching to help you really put it into practice.
It's truly remarkable to see the light come over an educator's face when they haven't truly experienced quality coaching. And then they do. And they're like, I've been missing out on this. Can I get some more? Like, talking about, I love your varied examples of them reaching out for more, and just sometimes the nuance of the trepidatiousness of initially starting. And then once they're in it, it's like, sometimes they're knocking down your door. I remember a teacher that I'd worked with for years and had done some professional development, worked in her building, but never really got to that true deep level of coaching due to kind of a friendship and also other priorities within the system. And it's remarkable. I remember sitting in rapport under a table, kind of hiding and coaching with her and talking about some data. And she's, where's this been all my life? What's going on? And so I just appreciate you sharing so many essential elements and facets of coaching and how we can be all the more successful within it.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a huge proponent. I think all of us should also experience coaching. If you are a coach, I know Jim Knight, he had done some level of life coaching. I signed up to do coaching. It turns out I'm not great at being coached. That's something I'm going to still work on. My husband would probably attest to that as well. But to be in a position where you recognize, ooh, I may have a deficit, or even more, if you are exemplary at something, to go to what is that next level? I mean, everyone can benefit from coaching. I don't think there's a person on this planet who would not move farther, faster if they had access to a coach.
And C3's tagline is every coach needs a coach.
I know.
We share that sentiment
about every episode, maybe every other, but it always comes back to it. It always comes back to it.
Yes.
Well, we are just so enamored with everything that you've shared. I know that people are like taking notes in their notebook right now and just getting excited to dive into your book. But we want to just take a little bit more from you in our rapid fire questions. And you may have already addressed one of these because you kind of brought it up, but we'll see what you say. First, can you just tell us where we can learn more from and with you, where we can follow you? You mentioned Instagram being your fave right now, but what do you have coming down the pike and what can we learn more from you and where?
Well, I wish I had more to offer you. I will say, if you go to safeandcivilschools.com, all spelled out, that's kind of where all of our resources are housed. You can look at any of us who are members of the team and kind of learn more from there. And there's a space where you can inquire about additional services, et cetera. I don't have anything specifically where people necessarily sign up to get more information, although I think some of those are probably coming as we really build more of our virtual platform. And I know we did some, of course, during the pandemic and slightly post-pandemic where people could access that information. I'm on LinkedIn, but I'm terrible at it. Right? Like, are y'all on LinkedIn? It's like Facebook for real adults, right? Is that what it is?
Yes, it is.
I'm terribly lazy at it. And I get emails all the time that are like, so-and-so wants to connect with you. And I'm like, oh, I should probably look at that. But I am trying to get more active on LinkedIn. And then really, I got rid of all my other social media. I'm on Instagram, but it's only a personal account. You're welcome to follow me. It's Traveling Trish. But it's mostly pictures of my dog. So I'm warning you right now, it may not be useful for coaches. But man, I got to tell you, social media, while it's wonderful, I'm a podcast listener especially. I also just think it's a lot of connection without authenticity. And it's hard to maintain after a while. So come follow me on Instagram, find me on LinkedIn, and occasionally I'll go ahead and check that. I'll try to act like a real adult.
That is okay. We have a way to find you and we are able to read from you. And so that's what matters.
Perfect.
You know, and dog pictures make everybody happy. And sometimes that's right, what you need in the world.
For sure. For sure. So
tell us, what is your tagline or your bumper sticker for coaching?
Well, I think yours sounds better. So I actually wrote mine down in case I forgot it. Cause I was like, do I have a tagline? And now I'm thinking a lot of taglines, one of them being "We Tried," which I just think is a tagline for all humans in general. Mine is "Master the Starfish Effect." And y'all know that story about the starfish on the beach and how the guy's throwing it back. And the other person says, "Why are you doing that? There are thousands of starfish. It's not going to make a difference." And the other guy says, "It made a difference to that one." And it may sound really, I don't know, idealistic or lofty, but the idea that as a coach, the day-to-day wins have to be enough to sustain you. You have to master the starfish effect. You have to be okay with, I impacted this one person today that will impact potentially hundreds, if not thousands, of students across time. If you're just waiting for that one big goal at the end of the year, like we move state assessment forward X percentile, percentage points, you're always going to be disappointed.
Yeah. I appreciate that. And I think everyone in education wants all of those small wins, you know, throughout the system.
Small wins together make big wins, though. So,
well, that's a much better tagline.
I paraphrase of what you said. It's exactly what you said. We're good.
It's like one time I was at a football game and I heard a guy, you know, they were excited about a first down. And this other fan was like, "You don't win with first downs." And the guy said, "With enough of them, you do." And I thought, oh, my God, that's coaching. That's NFL coaching in a nutshell, right? I mean, coaching athletics is very similar to what we do in academics.
I have a fellow coach who she repeats it all the time. She's full of phrases, but she's always like, inch by inch, everything's a cinch, yard by yard, everything's hard. And it's just that silly reminder in the back of my head sometimes that I'm like, okay, no, it's just one small bite at a time. We can get there. But her little rhyme kind of sticks with me sometimes.
It stick with you in a good way, or like I'm a middle school person, so I automatically just throw up a little bit in my throat when I hear a rhyme. I know that's so terrible. I hope
you're okay.
Understands. It's amazing. Remember, I'm goodish. I'm only goodish.
Well, we're all only goodish, but I roam from more of the early elementary. So we do a lot of rhyming and singing, even if we can't carry a tune. So, you know, we appreciate those.
Like middle school. We'll go as far as how do you eat an elephant one bite at a time? But if we made it rhyme, dead and fire, like we're not going to listen to that. No.
We all got to have our realm of expertise, right? We're able to have our jam. But tell us one more thing. What is your go-to move that maybe you haven't shared with us, or some small superpower that you try to pull out in moments of coaching need?
I think it really takes all of the threads of what we've been talking about together. And that is on the level of curiosity. My go-to move is always when under attack, whether it's me personally or a resource I'm bringing to the table or an idea I have or something within the system of which I am a part, I always meet attack with inquiry. If that's your go-to move, instead of meeting attack with defense, to meet attack with inquiry, I think not only does that impact how we operate as coaches, truly, I think that impacts how we act in our day-to-day lives. I think it could improve all of our interpersonal relationships.
You did wonderful. We just so appreciate having you here and all of the various different facets that you were able to share with us and that we were able to cover and your beautiful examples. And we are just excited to be able to continue to utilize your work in the future and have you as part of our PLN.
Well, thank you for having me. What a fantastic opportunity. And I, as always, I think the more people hear a consistent message from everybody in their field, the happier we all are, the more validated we become over time. So thank you for letting me be part of that process.
Thank you.
Trisha shared with us the intentionality behind the CHIMPS and Stoic framework and how small changes can add up to big changes within the classroom. How might you use these frameworks to make adjustments? Thanks for listening to another episode of C3. Be sure to follow us on social media at C3 Coaches.
C3. Connecting, coaches, cognition. Whose thinking will you mediate today?